Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, before we get into it this week, I should mention that we are a man down. The rains have come to Austin again.
Yes, Nick had to race home and deal with biblical flooding,
yes,
I gather.
That's, as I understand it, yes.
Yes.
So Nick is not here. It is just me and Dave. So be prepared for that.
Yeah, be prepared for a lack of Nick and wish him luck with the tidal waves.
All right, so we're going to start with our events for the month, and I'm going to go ahead and go out all the way to September for the most part. We won't be hitting these every week, but I just want to give a quick rundown since we're past our All Ages Awesomeness.
Yep.
So, first of all, I want to mention we're participating in a Round Rock inter-business thing that Kaleidoscope Toys is doing called Where's Waldo in Round Rock?
And, you know, Kaleidoscope Toys used to be, like, our neighbor in this complex, and they just moved, an exit down.
No, they're our neighbor up the road over at, over at where the Sprouts is. And so, what this is we will have a Waldo cutout hidden in the store. Starting on Friday, July 1st, you can pick up a passport here or at one of the other locations. We'll sell you all the participation locations. You search for Waldo at each location. When you find him, you come up, you get a sticker for your passbook. When you've got all the space in your passport with stickers filled, you take it to Kaleidoscope, you get a participation prize, and you are entered in the Where's Waldo grand prize drawing. 10 lucky folks will win, and the winners, the prize will come from all the people participating. We're sending in some prizes, some graphic novels and stuff, so... it's a fun thing to do. Get out and see some other businesses in Round Rock. So the other participants are the Ceramic Lodge, Ginger Snaps Kids, Little Haircuts, Maggie Moo's, Natural Paws, Natural Wellness Center, Round Rock Public Library, and Starco Coffee.
Nice.
And Kaleidoscope Toys, of course. So that is something that's all going to be going on this month. It will start, again, on July 1st, which is, I believe, Friday?
Sounds possible.
It's plausible.
I want to track down Waldo.
Dave, you're going to help me hide Waldo. I don't think that's fair.
No, I'm going to get him. I found him.
If you come in and Dave is wrestling Waldo, you know that something's gone wrong.
That sounds like a euphemism.
Then we've got Gaming with Rogues coming up on July 16th. That's a Saturday. We're playing Niet, the trick-taking game of you sort of all cooperate on the rules and which rules don't get used. Is it
Russian Bears?
It is Russian Bears.
Yes.
But it's a fun game. Our former volunteer, now staffer, Chris Jones,
aboard, Chris.
Fell in love with it at Steve Carter's game night, and now he is wanting to run it for that.
Yep.
So, and then that next Sunday, the July 17th, will be our Magic the Gathering Eldritch Moon pre-release, which we are taking sign-ups for, so you can call us or email us and sign up for that.
Magic feels like it's on like a resurgence
it
lately.
It does
like,
seem
like
to be,
in the last year or a little bit more.
Yeah,
people have been like lots of good sets. People just seem hyped.
Yeah, agreed.
So I'm excited.
Yeah, and then coming up on August 9th, which is a little ways out, I realize we're going to do our Reading with Rogues. That's the second Tuesday in August, and our July selection, which again will start on Friday, is Watchmen. So if you've not read Watchmen you can get it for 15% off all throughout the month of July, or if you have a rogue card, 25% off.
You will find no better graphic novel than Watchmen.
It's true.
It's intense, it's deep, it has great characters, and if you've only seen the movie, then you may know the raw plot, but you don't know the story.
And then in August, we are going to do Suicide Squad Trial by Fire, the John Ostrander Suicide Squad. So our theme for Reading with Rogues this month is sort of complicated characters and anti-heroes, I guess.
I'm going to call it our theme is the 80s.
And it's also the 80s. So come out and talk about those two comics and all those things.
Yeah, anti-heroes is a good sort of sub-theme.
And then Saturday, September 17th, will be Batman Day. Third year running.
Yep.
We don't actually know what they're doing. They always do some kind of giveaway free comic. We are going to have some cosplayers here. We're going to have Catwoman for sure and maybe some others. We're going to have a couple artists coming down to sign and sketch who could not make it for All Ages. So it'll be a fun day. And more on that as we come. It's a couple months out. We haven't got details on it yet.
Yep.
But that's always a fun day. And we'll also be doing a sale on Batman stuff.
Yeah, it's been getting like cooler and cooler each year. I think what started as kind of a lark has snowballed very rapidly due to Batman.
People like Batman.
Batman is popular, as it turns out.
Yep.
And people want more of him.
Yes, indeed. maybe we'll hook up the PlayStation again and have Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. You know what I was just thinking? I don't know if people ever really cosplay as this, but Alfred. Alfred would be an awesome person for the older cosplayer to join in on.
Yep.
A little pencil thin mustache, a nice suit, and a tray. I feel like a serving tray.
Yeah.
And then you're good.
Yeah. All right. Wanted to say, mention some staff changes here. We want to say a fond farewell to Amanda Arias. She has gone on to full-time work at Hey Cupcake.
Yep.
So go visit her there and buy her cupcakes.
And in fact, I believe, I don't want to say what it is, but I just saw that she had like her specialty cupcake that she cooked up for them.
Yeah.
Remember that she was talking about the other week? I think it got a go, and it sounds like they will be producing that one for like their cupcake of the month
thing. Oh, that's very cool.
So yeah, go see what the surprise cupcake is.
And of course, she works in the bakery, so you can't actually go say hi to her.
Yeah. But just know she is toiling back there, making deliciousness.
We're going to miss Amanda. She was great. She's been here for about 2 years.
Yep.
John Carroll has also left us for full-time employment.
Yep. Thanks for leaving us in the lurch, fellas.
But Christopher Jones, who's been doing our Reading with Rogues, or Gaming with Rogues for a long time, has come on as our new part-timer. So say hi to him. He'll be here on Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday nights. Say hi to him. Make him feel welcome. You probably already know Chris.
I was going
to
say, chances are, if you've been in A, you've just seen him kind of chilling out with us, or B, you've come to the gaming nights.
Yeah.
Chris is a good friend of the store and has been for a long time.
Yeah. And then we want to mention All Ages was this weekend. If you missed it, sorry you missed it. It was awesome.
Yep.
If you came out, thanks for coming. It was awesome. And we want to say thank you to all the artists who came out and drew for us.
Yep. They were very generous with their time.
Thank you to our customer, Jeff Connor, for bringing us donuts.
Yep, that was super awesome. And I'd also thank his wife, Valerie, who I know always chips in on that.
Yep. And thank you to everybody who came in. And there were some cool sketches. If you go to our Facebook page, we've got a ton of cool sketches that were done all the day. We tried to get all of them. I don't know if we got all of them, but we got quite a few.
Yep.
It was just a great time. We'll be doing that again next June.
Not to sound too sappy, but the smiling faces on kids does make that day.
Yeah.
Just tons and tons of happy kids. And I saw just some beautiful sketches too for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, go check out our Facebook.
All right, moving on to news of the week. There's not a ton, and a lot of it's sort of heavily on the movie side of things. But let's start with the game news, which is they're doing a Buffy board game.
Oh, right, which is actually the second Buffy board game.
Yeah.
My brother had the previous one, and I remember playing it like once or twice. We didn't get a lot of play out of it, but it actually was a decent game.
Okay.
And I gather it's like, you know, commands high prices in the eBay market and stuff these days. But, you know, you all played members of the Scooby Gang, and, you know, I think they maybe had, you could play different seasons and maybe fight different big bads
or something. Right.
It was actually kind of neat. But I feel like it occurred before they started getting into, you know, like Battlestar Galactica and Firefly started really refining how well you could make a themed game.
Right, right.
And I forget some of the details on this one.
Well, I know that Spike is in it.
Oh, that's right. Was he? I think, yeah, maybe he was like a weirdly absent one from the previous one.
Oh, okay. Is that why it was mentioned?
And it's a co-op game, for sure. Like,
okay.
You are all working together to deal with whatever the threat is.
Do you happen to know off the top of your head who's doing it? I assume it's Cryptozoic.
I forget. I do not remember.
All right. Well, Geek & Sundry has a story on it. And, yeah, their headline is, a new Buffy board game is coming, and yes, Spike is in it. So, yes, apparently it was something of a sticking point. So, yeah, and they're sort of a fond memory. So it's being designed by the guy who did Albion's Legacy and Deep Five, neither of which I'm familiar with.
All right.
I don't know if they have the publisher. It says...
seem like it's very early on in the kind of announcement stage. Like, it may have just, like, the word leaked.
Yeah, it is scheduled to hit shelves October 28th. Which means we should see it next year sometime.
Yeah.
says a cooperative board game has players take the role of Buffy and her friends as they defend the town of Sunnydale from an onslaught of vampires and demons. There is also the goal of unraveling the plot of the real big bad who is scheming to open the Hellmouth. Players must work together using all their resources, including character special abilities, to help the defenseless residents of Sunnydale.
Could be cool.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed, like, that and also, like, say, oh, what's the upcoming one? The Labyrinth game people got really, really intrigued by.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully this might kind of mark a new era, you know, another surge of good licensed games.
And then moving on to TV news, we got actually still the movie news. So the big movie news is related to Rogue One.
Right. What's the
they have announced that James Earl Jones is going to be doing the voice for Darth Vader.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So in other words, Vader's going to be in it.
Vader's going to be Vader. Vader's going to be in it. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. All right, now we've got Spidey news. Spidey is going to be the biggest movie. There are so many people cast in it.
Yep.
So
what news do we have beyond...
Nick is not here for this because he would know how cool this is, but they have cast an actor from Fargo named Bokeem Woodbine.
Hey, yeah, I don't know who that is.
And he was Mike... I'm blanking on his name now. From this season's Fargo. He was my favorite part of Fargo this year. He's a great actor. I don't know what role he's going to play, but I'm super excited to have him in this movie.
You know what's interesting is it seems like there's many known actors in this movie, and a lot of cases people don't know who they're playing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interestingly mysterious.
Yeah.
Is Michael Keaton going to play the Vulture as originally?
I believe that's still going, but we don't know.
You know, as much as I like that casting, and I like that villain, I think he'd be a good kind of unusual one. I don't feel like Vulture is the kind of villain you normally have carrying a movie.
Well, he's definitely not the only villain.
Unless he's part of, like, some kind of syndicate.
I wonder if they're going to do the Sinister Six. Because they've got three different villains at least cast.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a lot to open with.
But if you're not doing an origin.
Right. And also, they've kind of... I mean, Civil War as a movie had a little bit of bloat to it, but... Man, that's about as good a job as I've ever seen with that many superheroes in a single movie. So they're getting smarter about it.
Yeah, it's been proven that you can do it with that. You can do the big characters. And I think that's – you can do a big cast of characters.
By the way, did you jot down – I don't know if you wrote this down on our for today, Randy, the other small bit of news about the Spider-Man franchise?
The Silver Sable one?
Yeah.
It's so rumored. We don't usually talk about rumors, but it's exciting because I love Silver Sable.
Right.
For people who don't know, and that's probably most of you, Silver Sable is from the fictional nation of Simcaria. She wore like a silver jumpsuit. She used her kai, which were like throwing blades and pistols. And she was a Nazi hunter like her grandfather. They like hunted escaped Nazis.
Yep.
And she was like a princess in that country,
right,
too.
Right, who had kind of like, in a way, rather than living the life of, you know, of royalty, had chosen to live as a mercenary.
Yeah, she had her wild pack that was her mercenary
and
team.
She was generally an ally of Spider-Man's. I think occasionally they kind of were at cross odds, but she was never a villain.
They butted heads because she was somewhat ruthless and Spidey didn't like that. She was the Punisher to his Daredevil.
Right, right.
And I always loved this character.
I like Silver Sable.
And I can absolutely see an interesting movie being made about her. I think Nazi hunting is kind of tricky to do. I think you'd have to make it like a Hydra hunter.
Right. It can get a little too real, I think.
Well, and she'd have to be a little older if she's hunting Nazis.
It's true. It's also like, yeah, that was broadly speaking, also not a lot of Nazis these days. They're all dying off if they're around. So it almost would have to become something else. You know, I think it'd be pretty easy to have something that had devastated her fictional nation.
Yeah.
You know, that they have a long grudge against.
Yeah.
It could even have ties to, you know, they could tie it into whatever Spider-Man's villains are. It's an obvious thing to do.
Yeah, well, because the thing is that the real thing with Silver Sable is that she's a mercenary leader and a princess and all this kind of stuff. Like, the character itself is interesting.
It's a fun, larger-than-life kind of concept.
And has a great costume, by the way. I like her costume.
Yeah, it's a good look. So, yes, although it is just the rumor stage, I hope I'm pulling for it.
Yep.
I think since they have not been able to pull off a strong female lead movie, it'd be so weird if it was Silver Sable. Like, say, Wonder Woman.
Or Black Widow.
But we live in a world where the DC TV verse was launched by Green Arrow, basically.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Yeah, I can see it. I think this is as likely right now as the Sinister Six movie that got Doug Petrie was involved in, or no, Drew Goddard was going to do, that got tanked. I think that everyone likes to say they're going to do a shared universe. I don't believe it until the third movie comes out.
Right.
So we'll see. But I would like that one to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to TV news, and there's quite a bit of it. First of all, they have officially cast Linda Carter as the president of Supergirl.
Yep. We talked about it a few weeks, months back or whatever.
They had talked about wanting to do it in season one. They didn't manage it, but they have officially confirmed she'll be in season two.
Super cool.
Yep. Maybe I'll find a way to watch it, since the CW is making it really hard to watch if you have if you're a cord cutter.
Yeah, I heard that.
Then we've got the Luke Cage news.
What was the Luke Cage news?
Tribe Called Quest is going to score the Luke Cage show.
Now, I know that it's not really like the full band, because a few members have died over the years.
Sure, but...
I mean, it's just super cool. Like, you know, true greats of hip-hop.
Yeah.
And I, in fact, remember a few years back, following a thread on a message board that was like, hey, what kind of music do you think various heroes listen to?
Yeah.
And at some point they got to Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, you know what? I see him as kind of an old school hip hop guy. I see him as a Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, yeah, that's a good call. And apparently it was a really good call.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool, and I'm sure the music will be great. The music for all of them has been great. Jessica Jones and Daredevil both have had great music. Yep. So,
if you're not familiar with, do a little YouTubing, check them out. It's great times.
Finally, this was one that you wanted to sort of speculate on, Dave. We have heard from Brian Fuller that Star Trek the TV series may be a little more graphic, a little more dark,
a little edgier.
A little edgier.
I don't know that he actually said the word edgy. It seems for sure it's getting a lot of clickbaity type headlines about, you know, new Star Trek to push the envelope.
The guy who made Hannibal is going to make a Star Trek Hannibal. Yeah.
And it is like, I guess it's because it's not on their network. The deal. It's sort of like off the grid. My guess is that that's not what Star Trek is generally. No. And I think he will respect that. But Star Trek has at times had an edge, and I always think of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Wrath of Khan had, like, some pretty stark violence in it.
Yeah.
Whether it's the little creepy eel things that burrow into your ears, or the horrible destruction when Khan first attacks and you see lots and lots of people on the Enterprise die.
Yeah.
Like, with burns and stuff like that. And I think that they will probably be using it more like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you've seen more of... I mean, I haven't seen much of Fuller's stuff at all, Randy. What else did he make? What are his other notable shows?
Well, beyond Hannibal, which is very dark...
Sure.
He's done a lot of sort of whimsical stuff, like Pushing Daisies and... Right.
And you wouldn't say that that was like a...
He's got a love of the macabre that is akin to Tim Burton.
That's interesting.
I mean, I could see them doing a sort of a more horror-y take on Star Trek but that's not going to be his vibe, I don't think.
Right.
I trust what Brian Fuller's going to do with Star Trek. Certainly, I think that TV is a better fit for it than movies.
It is a little weird in the sense that there's almost no swearing in Star Trek. Like, the shows have never had it. When they did it in the movies, they would sometimes do a little bit of token stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, McCoy certainly seemed like somebody who, if he could swear, might have swore a lot. I would not mind a little bit of mild swearing in my Star Trek. It's not gonna offend my sensibilities.
You know, the only thing that kind of bums me out about Star Trek, and I know that this is a risk of being boring, is that Star Trek is supposed to represent sort of a utopian future,
right?
And so the more sort of darkness and reality you give it, the less utopian future it can be,
right? Wrath of Khan is like my favorite of the movies, but it's such a compelling sort of revenge movie. That it's just like its raw craft is what makes it such a draw. But in some ways, it's like the violence of it and stuff like that is not very tricky.
Yeah.
Certainly Next Generation felt a little bit more clean about that. And I'd like to see some of the character rawness of the classic Trek.
Yeah.
But like with the idealism of Next Generation, I guess I'd say.
Next Generation had the problem of occasionally being boring, sappy.
It's true.
Saccharine.
Yeah. Babylon 5 is an alternative that was coming out at the time that kind of showed how you could still be kind of hopeful and present a hopeful vision while at the same time having more down-to-earth characters.
Well, Babylon 5 was very enmeshed in politics, though. Like, politics were still a thing.
Right.
And Star Trek, for the most part, used to be about, like, the Federation is unified, and then Next Generation sort of slipped in that there were some, like, hawks in the Federation, that there was political divides there, and then Deep Space Nine went full-on, like, warfare and all that kind of stuff. And the funny thing is...
all the complications of, like, proxy wars and stuff like that.
And Deep Space Nine is one of the most beloved Star Trek, so it may be that people don't want a full utopian Star Trek universe.
Right. I think if Fuller does his job well, or this is what I would like to see... is a universe that has both things going on.
Yeah.
A Federation that's pretty strong and unified based on optimism and science and rationality and all of that, the classic Star Trek stuff, and empathy. And then, but acknowledges it's a big world, and there might be some rough pockets of the Federation.
Yeah.
There can still be hawks out there. It's still difficult to deal with powerful alien races that don't agree with us, you know?
Yeah.
Star Trek seems to work best with big metaphors and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Oftentimes you run into an alien race where their problem, you're like, oh, that's Israel-Palestine or something like it.
Right.
It's a complicated situation that, you know, in a sort of hopeful way, within an hour of an hour-long episode, they find some kind of solution to. Deep Space Nine showed you kind of the extended version where there weren't easy solutions, and I wouldn't mind seeing a mix.
Yeah, I agree. We will see whenever that comes out. I don't know if that's this year or next year.
I'm not sure. I bet it's next year, right? I don't know.
Yeah. All right, that is all our news for this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, June 29th, and this is a fifth week, which traditionally means not a lot of big releases. For example, Civil War II is not this week. Yeah. There are no Rebirth titles this week. And yet, for me, this was a huge week of comics.
Yep. Although, you know what? I'm going to quick mention before we jump into the week, the Rebirth reprints hit this week.
Yes, yes. There's actually a lot of reprints.
Part of the very reason why I didn't have quite as much time, or we didn't have quite as much time to read today, is because we spent so much extra time when we were prepping the logging in the order and counting it and all that stuff, pulling all the special orders we have for Rebirth.
Right.
I mean, there were like dozens and dozens of requests for all the various Rebirth stuff. So that will in fact be out tomorrow.
Yeah, if you've been waiting on some Rebirth stuff, chances are a lot of it came in this week. For example, DC Universe Rebirth number 1 third printing is here.
Yeah.
Superman number 1, Superman Rebirth number 1, Batman Rebirth number 1.
Green Arrow
Rebirth number 1, and Green Lanterns Rebirth number
1. Correct.
Those are all out this week.
Also Scooby Apocalypse.
Scooby Apocalypse number 1. Also, every issue of Spider-Man Deadpool was reprinted.
I forgot those were all going to come
out. So we have Spider-Man Deadpool 1 through 5 in stock right now.
Yep.
So if you've missed some stuff, a lot of it got reprinted this week. So that is, there is definitely still plenty of stuff.
Yes.
And
yes,
for me, there was a lot of stuff. So the book that grabbed my attention this week is actually one that I've been excited about since I met the creative team at Heroes Con.
Oh, man, I wanted to read this. I just didn't get around to it.
So this is Black Mask, who are definitely the up-and-coming. They're like the modern-day Valiant.
That's the name of the company, not the comic.
Black Mask is the name of the company. They've been putting out a lot of books. Space Riders by local Austin creators.
Yep.
They've had Young Terrorists, and I believe We Can Never Go Home.
Yep.
Some other books. I talked to one of the guys, Matthew Rosenberg, who's one of their writers and also one of their publicity guys, and I asked him like why the trades are so hard to come by, and there was a printing error or something. So the trades will be available again soon, and when they do, I definitely recommend checking it out. Their vibe is definitely sort of a heavy artistic company, sort of a little bit violent, a little bit adult.
I would say, don't you think, broadly speaking, Randy, people who have been enjoying the Image renaissance are probably going to want to look into Black Mask titles?
Yes, yes. In particular, I would say that if you like the kind of things like Rat Queens or Saga or Sex Criminals or Bitch Planet, you're going to want to read the books, particularly the one this week that is my pick, which is Jade Street Protection Services number 1.
Jade Street Protection Services.
Yes.
Got it.
So what this is, and they pitch it as a cross between Sailor Moon and what was the other thing that Tila said was a mashup with?
I forget.
But to me, it's
something
like
edgy.
It's like Sailor Moon with a little bit of the Breakfast Club. That was their pitch,
right?
And it's got that, but it's also got a little bit of what I like about, say, Rat Queens and Deadly Class, and that this is about a school for girls learning to using their magical girl powers.
Yep,
they each have a weapon. And we meet them as they're in, like, transformation classes, learning to transform into their magical girl forms. They have different weapons, whether it's, like, a gun. One of them has a gun. There's a staff. There's
That's not things. A traditional Sailor Moon
It is
weapon.
Not a traditional. She actually looks a bit more like Cammy from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
There's definitely a little bit of different anime.
Some anime tropes and stuff.
Yeah. They all have gems that they use. They focus their weapons. So basically, they all wind up in detention, and as kids will do, they decide to escape to New York instead of going to detention. They're going to go get some froyo, and they run into their teacher doing something shady, and it seems like she may be running something on the side, and there may be someone working against these magical girls. It is there's great personalities. The lead characters are all really interesting, and the art by Fabian Lelay is so good. It is beautiful artwork. I don't know exactly who to compare it to.
You know what, Randy? This is I'm looking at it upside down.
Yeah.
But is there not some comparison to be made with the art on Hawkeye?
Yeah, I can see that. The Aja. Again, I would also compare it to sort of, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Saga art a little bit.
Sure.
It's also got sort of
Fiona
a clean
Staples.
Line. Yeah, Fiona Staples. It's also got sort of a clean line that I think of as sort of like Chris Samnee or, and there's definitely an anime influence. And the colors by Mara Jane Carpenter is really fantastic. But it's a really, really good book. I am super excited to see where it goes from here. And they have a preview in the back of Kim and Kim, which is a story about sort of troublesome futuristic bounty hunters,
mm-hmm.
a pair of Kims that I read on the plane to Heroes. I read a preview copy and is really great.
I feel like the other kind of, I mean, the kind of notable thing is that this is a chance for people to get in on a company that is probably going to be one of the buzz companies, I bet, of the next 5-10 years.
I agree.
And you might as well check it out now before you become a Johnny Come Lately.
Yeah, and Black Mask, these books have been selling out, so definitely worth a look. If you want one, drop us a line. We'll put one aside for you.
Yeah.
Dave, what is your pick?
My pick is a graphic novel, or it's actually a novel. Of sorts, but not a full novel, and it's sort of illustrated fun novel.
Fake history.
Yes, it's from the Osprey guys who do all those military books about zeroing in on like a specific area of the Napoleonic Wars or medieval stuff. They span all the different eras.
Right.
This one is called The Cthulhu Wars, and presupposes that there, since the discovery of America, that is to say the colonization of America, that there has been a shadow war being fought against Lovecraftian forces.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of the book, it has both, it has like photographs, paintings, it has the feel of like, in the same way that World War Z, without imagery, sort of built up this false, or this cool fake alternate history.
Yeah.
This has a feel of a rather elaborate alternate history. Here is a shot of a World War II soldier with a, Randy, you can see it's a grainy photograph, looks just like a World War II thing, but with tentacles rising up out of a jungle. So they use mock photos mixed with real stuff. I'm going to read the back of this,
okay,
because I feel like there's probably not a better description than what they themselves wrote. And it's a little bit long.
Okay.
So it says, from the Patriots raid on the necromancer Joseph Kerwin to the Special Forces assault on Lang in 2007, this unique document reveals the secret and terrible struggle between the United States and the supernatural forces of the Cthulhu mythos. In this war, immortal cultists worship other dimensional entities and plot to raise an army of the dead. Incomprehensible undersea intelligences infiltrate and colonize American seaports, and alien races lurk beneath the ice of Antarctica and high in the mountains of Afghanistan. Anyway, I obviously did not read this entire thing all in one sitting.
Sure.
But it is one of those very readable thing with lots of little sidebars on this is everything from Cthulhu stuff during the Cold War, during the Civil War. It reimagines the what's the thing with the deep ones? Innsmouth. The Innsmouth stuff, and within a historical context. It's basically, I would say, a must buy for anybody out there who enjoys things Lovecraftian. If you've been reading what's Alan Moore's thing? Providence, but prior to that.
Neonomicon.
And It looks to be a very well thought out alternate history with all the Cthulhu weirdness that you love. All
right.
So that is my pick.
My backup pick also is sort of an alternate history thing, although it's more a conspiracy thing. It's called Cryptocracy Number One from Dark Horse, written by Van Jensen, who I don't actually know, and artist by veteran artist Pete Woods, doing beautiful stuff here. And in fact, I believe he does his own colors, which I've not seen before. So this is a conspiracy. There are 9 families that rule the world, basically. They have an underground conspiracy going on, and they seem to be families drawn from the Roman gods, like Mars and Jupiter and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to sort of guide humanity to a better future. They go inside a fraternity at college, like the Skull and Bones. They have gray aliens working for them to sort of edit history. They have these big chupacabra-looking monsters. It is basically every conspiracy. It's a little bit lighthearted, but it's also got some seriousness to it. There's a lot of
What's the tone?
There's a lot of action and violence, and clearly there's some family squabbling going on. There's a little bit of Game of Thrones, like families at each other's throats, and miracle science being hidden, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting conspiracy story, and it's got an element of like superhero to it almost. Like they use the technology as a like this guy uses like solid light guns and shields against bikers who are trying to assassinate a politician who they are recruiting, that kind of thing.
Randy, is this a miniseries or like an ongoing?
I believe it is a miniseries. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay,
but it's a really promising first issue. There's a little text piece in the back about it, and it's a fun bit of like makes fun of conspiracies, but at the same time, and cryptozoology, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, sort of embraces it and uses it to build a shared world.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. Dave, what is your secondary pick?
A secondary pick is a normal type comic. It is the, you know, we've talked about the series Grayson.
Yep.
Over the last several years. It's about to finally come back into being Nightwing with Rebirth. And so this is the last hurrah for Grayson. It is the final issue of the series. It is actually an annual, so it's Grayson Annual 3. And it has a pretty specific premise. When it begins, you see Harley Quinn traipsing down a hallway, kind of singing to herself. She knocks on a door, kicks it in, and inside she finds John Constantine, Simon Boz, the Green Lantern.
Right.
Azrael.
A new Azrael.
A new Azrael, yeah. Although I get the impression he may have been around somewhere else in the New 52.
Okay, all right.
And then lastly, the person who's called them together, which is Jim Corrigan.
Okay.
A.K.A. the sometimes Spectre. Yeah.
Although I don't know if he is in New 52.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure either, but they fill you in on most of the stuff you need to know about him. And he is looking... He knows that they've all had run-ins with, what do they call him, Agent... what's Grayson's agent number? 37?
I don't remember, but yeah.
And you know, the Spiral has, like, this ultimate... anti-identification technology, where all their members have that spiral faces and this like nanotechnology that keeps them hidden and stuff like that. And Corrigan explains that there's like some of the powers that he serves are trying to pin this guy down for their own reasons, and sort of asks. He reins in the four people here to tell about their speak about their encounters with him.
Mm-hmm.
So each one of them, in turn, sort of. Almost in the tradition of, like, Almost Got Him.
Oh, nice, yeah.
On the Batman animated series and stuff.
Yeah.
Each one of them tells a tale of an encounter with Grayson during, in his spy mode.
Oh, that's a fun premise.
It's a fun premise, and it leads to a fun conclusion, and, you know, it's an unusual collection, too. It's like, what happens when he bumps into Constantine, and how does that come about? You know, how does he meet a Green Lantern? It's also interesting to see how close people came to kind of knowing, you know, like, when he's meeting with Harley Quinn, she's kind of, like, schooling him. She's like, you probably don't know anything about Gotham or whatever, because they happen to be working on a Gotham thing. It's a good kind of last hurrah for the storyline.
Yeah.
You don't need to know anything about what's going on other than the fact that Dick Grayson's been a secret agent whose identity has been hidden from everybody, including the allies.
Yeah.
Over the last few years. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that you should randomly pick it up, but it's an awesome, awesome little finale to it.
Cool.
With a cool premise.
All right.
What else we got? Jump in your pile.
Yeah, good.
Right. You go ahead and go first.
I read more.
Yeah, you read more stuff.
All right, so we should mention Captain America number 2.
Yep.
Finally, you will learn the whole secret of the Hail Hydra thing, which I'd say spoilers, but honestly, if you've been on the internet at all, you've heard about it.
Yeah.
The answer here is exactly what Nick and I sort of knew was going to happen. If you read the first issue, you got a sense of it. But this is basically a follow-through to Standoff. If you read that Avengers crossover Standoff,
yeah.
This sort of explains how that led into the Hail Hydra Captain America. Definitely gets it, it's going to make the people who really get outraged about that feel a little silly, because it is comic book storytelling. It's what it always was. Yeah, it's a story. Captain America is not a Nazi. He's not going to stay a Nazi forever. That was never the plan.
I don't know if you can say this without spoiling anything, but. Does it seem like it's going to still be a kind of a notably extended storyline, or do you feel like this might be something finite within a storyline?
I bet story arc. I bet the first 6 issues.
Interesting. Okay. that's where we're putting our money right now.
I could be wrong. I mean, if Brubaker were writing it, I would say this is going to go for like 3 or 4 years, because he tended to write sort of long stories. Spencer, I don't think, will write that long. I think his stuff will wrap a little more than that.
Interesting.
So I think this is probably going to be the 6-issue initial arc, and they are probably shocked at just how much attention it got. Captain Marvel number 6 is a Civil War 2 tie-in, but it's also the start of Ruth Fletcher Gage and Christos Gage, you might know from Daredevil TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You might know Christos Gage from a ton of stuff in comics, but they are taking over the book. Chris Anker remains on art, and it is all about Captain Marvel. We learn who the council is behind Alpha Flight, which was really cool. Henry Peter Gyrich raises his ugly head again.
Oh, nice.
And
as the classics.
As does a guy, the Alpha Flight ambassador from Canada, who is definitely a Justin Trudeau lookalike. His name is Philip Bouleau. Philippe Bouleau.
Yeah.
As well as, like, Black Panther. They sort of reveal that there's a world council behind the Alpha Flight, and I liked that. And she has to sort of explain why she wants to explain why they didn't know about certain things without giving away the secret about the Inhuman who was at the center of the Civil War.
Interesting. Okay.
Because they don't want any of those people knowing about a precog.
Right.
It seems dangerous. Black Panther number 3 hits this week. That is Ta-Nehisi Coates and Brian Stelfreeze's slightly delayed but always good sort of complex political story of Black Panther, which I've been still digging. If you're a Frank Quitely fan, you will want to know that he is back with Jupiter's Legacy 2. Mark Miller and Frank Quitely are back for the sequel to that series. Number 2 of Daredevil Punisher by Charles Soule, and I think it might be a different artist. Riley Brown doing layouts and Simon Kudensky doing pencils and inks. But Daredevil Punisher team up, I'm kind of enjoying that book. Mockingbird number 4 sees Mockingbird with team up with her old ex-husband Hawkeye.
Look for the Dr. No cover.
Yep. And then a bunch of stuff I did not have time to read this week. Silk number 9, Spider-Man number 5, Uncanny X-Men number 9, Darth Vader number 22, Bloodshot Reborn number 14 starts a new story called Bloodshot Island. And if you've never read Bloodshot Reborn, if you're a Punisher or like military fiction, that kind of thing, give this one a shot. It's Jeff Lemire writing. It's beautiful artwork. It's got sort of a painty style to it. Heavy on the action. I'm looking forward to diving back in. I really like the first story arc of this series. They wrap Plutona, Jeff Lemire and Emmy Lennox's Plutona. And then a new chapter of Book 5 of DK3, The Master Race.
Yep.
Which sees Superman and Batman fighting, which I know seems crazy when Frank Miller's writing.
Yep, although, I guess he is writing. But I will say, without giving away too much, there's also some teaming up in this.
Yep. I also saw some trades. Zdarsky and Erica Henderson's Jughead Volume 1, which I've really enjoyed. The newest volume of Ms. Marvel, Ms. Volume, Volume 5, which is the first six issues of the relaunch. Saga Volume 6, which is always much anticipated.
Yep.
And Uncanny X-Men Volume 1, which I've been really enjoying this. It's like the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants version of X-Men. And the Tom King's Vision, which everybody seems to love, and I'm excited to finally give a shot to.
Right, now that we've kind of got it all in one place.
Yeah.
His, to hear it spoken of, it sounds like it's an almost, you know, like, eerily horror-ish take on, you know, trying to live in, like, a suburban life.
Yeah.
For Vision. You know, having seen, like, what was the recent robot movie?
Ex Machina?
Ex Machina, yeah. And seeing how that kind of was had, like, a kind of a creepy, sinister vibe running through it. Did you see that, right?
Yeah, I did.
I bet there's a little bit of that to Vision, from what I'm guessing.
I've also heard people compare it to Fargo, which I love Fargo.
That's
so
interesting.
Sort of weird things happening in suburbia.
Is that
my
stuff?
List. I know I hit a lot of stuff, but
okay,
I know you got a couple things.
There's just a handful of things I'm going to mention. Eric Powell of the, you know, one of the ultimate cult books, The Goon, has a new series out called Hillbilly. Haven't had a chance to read it yet, but Randy, what do you know about, like, premise-wise of what Hillbilly is?
So, I'm not sure. It seems to be sort of Hillbilly, you know, weird horror, backwoods tales, the kind of thing that Eric Powell does.
Yep. Let's see, I don't know if you, did you mention Avengers 11?
I did not.
Avengers 11 continues. I think I picked maybe this issue for like my pick of the week last time was Avengers 10, or all new, all different Avengers 10. Anyway, Annihilus is the big bad in this, and they've been captured by him. So this is kind of like a one of those prison break kind of issues, and I always like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was fun.
I know you mentioned Spider-Man number 5, the Miles Morales Spider-Man, but I did want to mention specifically it involves his interaction with the Black Cat. Now that she's more of a little bit more of a crime boss.
Yeah, she's
really
more of the kingpin now.
And there's some fun stuff in there. Bendis writes some fun scenes, notably. At some point, he's kind of confronting her, I saw, and he's like, you're under arrest. And she's like, that's cute. and it's like, it's funny for kind of a, she's a relatively low-powered character, but high on the experience. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you don't even have a chance, kid.
Right.
The trade paperback of Illuminati came out. This is the
complete series, basically.
Complete series, yeah. Was it Josh Williamson?
It's Josh Williamson, yeah.
Yeah.
Who does Nailbiter and Birthright.
Mm-hmm.
And Flash Now.
That was the other thing I was trying to say. This was kind of an unusual series that I liked about the Hood gathering together a bunch of villains, but specifically spotlighting Titania.
Yeah.
The kind of bruiser, arch foe of She-Hulk chick, who's oftentimes has an on-again, off-again with the Absorbing Man. And it sort of showed her getting drawn into this and trying to figure out what to do with her life. I missed like the last issue or two when it was coming out, but I happened to read the last issue and it was a good finale.
Okay.
So although this essentially ended up being just a little 6-issue series, it still holds together pretty strongly on its own. And I would say if you kind of want to read a good little relatively short supervillain book, check out Illuminati. It was cool.
You know, I gotta say, I kind of like these series that become miniseries. Like Red Wolf that just came out last week that I like. And there's definitely others that like...
Well, you know... Illuminati,
Hercules.
Right. Illuminati reminded me of like... not quite, but when Warren Ellis did Thunderbolts...
Yeah.
He did do like a 10-issue run.
Yeah.
But once it was done, it might as well have been a miniseries.
Yes.
And so it makes for a great standalone trade paperback.
Yeah, there's something to be said for these series that come out and they're like... I think Marvel's doing it on purpose. They're putting series out that like, this probably won't fly...
Right.
If it doesn't, we've got a story arc that we'll collect as a trade.
Exactly.
And these are ones to snap up because they won't stay in print for long, but they're good, fun, like standalone stories. Yeah. And I think that
like Weird World had a following.
Yeah.
And that disappeared. You know, that book disappeared. But you know, if you read and enjoyed it, you know, I think you'll still get sort of a little complete story out of it.
Well, I feel like books like Mockingbird's an example.
Yeah.
I think Mockingbird was put out there with the notion that if this sells, that's great. If it doesn't, it'll be a great little miniseries. I even think Black Panther could have been that. I mean, that Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Right.
But I'm sure they assumed that like he was going to be too busy to keep writing it.
You sometimes brace for the worst.
And I feel like they were probably like, well, we'll put this out, and if people buy Black Panther in huge unprecedented numbers, it'll be a series. If they don't, we'll have a 6-issue story by a genius-winning writer who we can collect into a miniseries. I think that's a very practical and cool way to do things.
Yep.
I mean,
as it happens, that one's probably going to stay an ongoing.
I mean, DC's doing it too. Look at Omega Men,
right?
Which Tom King's book, which a lot of people liked. It's going to be one big 12-issue trade, probably.
Yep.
And it'll be a story that maybe will stay in print, and creators love it, and so it'll be stuff that will influence the universe.
Right. It will still, have an influence, even if it is not a big ongoing story. I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.